SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We are back at the races, hour two on this Tuesday, and the afterglow, of course, of Triple Crown Saturday at Belmont Park. Jay Pribman back home and also in decompression mode, I would imagine, after the intense 5 weeks. And you know, you say 5 weeks, but it's a lot more than that. And, of course, it was a intense 111 days for Justify, and Jay Pribman was telegraphing that portion of Justify's travels and travails well early on this. Jay, here we are, and looking back and chronicling everything that happened. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Yes, what a short, strange trip it's been.
There's a good twist. Jay, we'll cover all the bases on this, and you know, first and foremost, your immediate response watching Saturday and seeing this unfold in terms of a Triple Crown for second time in 3 years.
I mean, I thought the race unfolded much like it did with American Pharoah, where you know Justify was. He needed to go to the lead to begin with, and then when he drew the rail, it was obvious that that was what the strategy had to be. And I thought that, you know, to go through what he went through, which basically, I mean, he won the Triple Crown. He won the Belmont Stakes 111 days after his first race. That's just incredible to see a horse make that. I can't imagine seeing something like that again, where a horse comes that far in that short amount of time. And to me, what the way that ties back to your question about the race is that, to me, what everything I'd seen of Justify in the couple days preceding the race at Belmont Park indicated he was going to run a big race. Both of his gallops were very impressive, especially the first one on Thursday. But you know, the one thing you don't know is the toll going to finally catch up with him at some point. And in watching the race, you could just see that Mike Smith had horse every time he needed to let him out and maybe put up some separation between his rivals and then give him a little bit of a breather and let them catch up and then let him out again. And Justify just seemed to respond to every cue. And that's the mark of not only a really smart horse, but a horse that had a lot to give. And that's one of the things that's just amazed me about him, is just how fast he had to learn all these lessons, and he just handled everything. It was almost like the first time they showed him whatever he needed to do, he's just like, all right, I got this. You just need that kind of an animal to be able to pull off what he did. And every time that somebody came to him, he let out a notch, and as they were going around the far turn, I was like, you could just see that he was winning the race. So I thought Gronkowski made a terrific run to make a big run at him in upper stretch. But at every point, when I've seen this horse run, whenever going back to the San Anita Derby, when Bolt Oro took a couple of runs at him, or in the Kentucky Derby, when he had Bolt Oro on the far turn and then Audible in upper stretch, Good Magic in upper stretch make a run at him. I mean, every time somebody's made a run at him, there's more there, and he's just a really, really talented horse.
Your recap in the immediate aftermath, and obviously, you know, minutes after a race ends, and after you've talked to Mike Smith and you've talked to Baffert and get the, you know, the story that is a, you know, the instant reaction. Then there's some, you know, some obviously further analysis, and we'll get to that. But your discussions with Bob Baffert, and we expect to talk to Bob at 11:30. He really is talking in reverential terms about the horse, and he has said some things to you, Jay, specifically, that hasn't been as, you know, that you really are the only person that have heard. And I know he doesn't want to take away from Arrogate and American Pharoah, but Baffert seems like he's in awe of what this horse is.
I think that's a fair thing to say. He's in awe of him, but I don't know that he'd compare him to American Pharoah or Arrogate. I mean, I just think with the achievement of what Justify was in the process of doing over the last few weeks, and then what he did do on Saturday is what I think he has marveled at. But he thought this horse had that kind of talent. I mean, I remember, I'll never forget the morning of that horse's first race. I was out for workouts, and when the morning wound down, I said, you know, he had two horses in a maiden race. So what about, you know, this horse this afternoon? Because I'd heard some rumbles that Justify could run, but I hadn't, you know, and I'd seen a work of his, but still, I'm just curious what the trainer thinks. And he looked at me and he said, I've got some really big plans for that horse. So, you know, and he won that afternoon, and he immediately put him on the fast track to try and make the Derby, which at the time was like, oh, well, nobody's done that since 1882. And it was a late start, you know, February 18. It wasn't like it was January 2. So, remember, he started a month after Magnum Moon, for instance, who was in the same ballpark, not having raced at 2, and went into, as it turned out, the Kentucky Derby with one more start than Justify did, and we haven't seen him since. And so and that's not a knock on Magnum Moon. It's just an illustration of what it took from Justify to do what he did, not only to win the Kentucky Derby, but then to go on and win the Preakness and the Belmont as well under that schedule. And Magnum Moon hasn't even run since the Kentucky Derby. So that's the contrast in what Justify was able to pull off. And yeah, I mean, Bob was obviously very excited about the horse before he ran, but then to see him run that first race, as you know, he immediately went very prominently on the Derby Watch Top 20 following that start. And he was at the top of our list, you know, after another start or two. We thought we had good coverage in terms of what the intentions were with him and what Mike Watchmaker and I thought of his talent. And then I remember the morning after the Preakness, Bob called me into the horse's stall. He wanted to show me something with the horse from a physical nature, and we were just comparing him to Point Given. He was just pointing out physically where they differed in terms of, instead, the one specific thing I remember him pointing out was how Justify's hind end is a lot more developed and stronger back there. But he also said, he looked at me and he said, you'll never see another horse like this again. In the context, not that like this is the greatest horse ever, but you'll never see a horse that can go through what this horse is going through and still pull it off. It was in that context. And then we saw it unfold again on Saturday. You know, this was the culmination of an extremely talented horse and a trainer who wasn't afraid to let him have the chance to do something unprecedented.
That speaks really volumes about what Baffert, you know, where he stands in the aftermath of this. And you actually foreshadowed that, Jay, on Friday when we were talking.
I wrote a feature story about how, excuse me, if Baffert won the race, it would be, he would stand alone as the winningest trainer in Triple Crown race history with 15 wins, but he'd also be only the second to have trained two Triple Crown winners with Sonny Jim Fitzsimmons with Gallant Fox in Omaha, you know, back in 1930 and 35, respectively, being the only other. Even prior to the Kentucky Derby, I'd done a feature on Baffert talking about how, you know, his goal was to try and win another Triple Crown, and it was from the standpoint of you know, people will set goals for themselves. You know, where do you want to be in 5 years? Where do you want to be in 10 years? What do you want to accomplish? And he's saying it in that context, but he also, you know, strongly referenced what he thought of Justify in that story. And that's, we've had a package on the Racing Form website of all the coverage we've had of Justify since his first win, and there's obviously quite a bit of it. But that story, I think, really, I put a tweet up the other day saying it's kind of like Babe Ruth pointing towards the outfield fence. You know, he knew what he had, and he did it.
Well, and as you referenced it, and as that point that came up at Preakness, and actually I was in proximity when Bob was going through that with you yesterday. John Gunther, Jay, he remarked that he thought that between Preakness and Belmont, that through all of this, you know, all of what goes into this, that the horse had even gained weight, and that, you know, that it was apparent that he was thriving. And it's just, and you also had referenced yourself that having seen so many of these Triple Crown tries and how the horses invariably are getting frayed at the edges. And by contrast, this one was getting burnished.
I mean, that was part of our discussion that I had with you on Friday on your show. It's just how, you know, everything that this horse, every sign this horse was giving off was that he was doing extremely well. And that the toll, that there hadn't been a toll taken on him for the ambitious schedule that he'd been on. And, you know, having done this for a while, that's unusual. I mean, usually they're starting to show some signs of wear and tear. Just they're losing weight, they're tucked up, maybe they're getting a little nervous. Never any of that with this horse. And I'll tell you this now, but I was like, it was an off the record comment, but on Friday Baffert said to me, this horse has never been better. So then that was, you know, we saw evidence of that on Saturday. I think to have that ambitious a schedule and still perform like he did, it just shows how good he is. And one thing I'm really looking forward to is, I remember when American Pharoah won the Triple Crown, there were similar kinds of doubting Thomases about, well, how good is he, and his buyer figures aren't quite as strong as maybe you'd like to see historically. But one thing people, I think, forget is that in the case of with American Pharoah and now with Justify, these horses are on a prescribed schedule, and they've got to just do a lot in a short amount of time, and you got to run and run and run. It's like a playoff game every time. It's running at a high level every time. You give these horses a little bit of a breather and train them into a race. I mean, American Pharoah's last race was off the charts because they just gave him the time after the Travers and trained him into that race, and he delivered maybe his best performance ever. And I think Justify has the potential to have that kind of a performance. Not that his other performances haven't been great. I mean, his Derby, when you look back at the pace of that race and where Promises Fulfilled finished and the horses that he had to turn back repeatedly during the race, I mean, that was an incredible performance. And it's an incredible achievement what he's done to get to this point so soon after making his debut. But I really think for just an optimum performance of how good can this horse be, if this horse is trained after his next one or two starts into the Breeders' Cup where they just take their time and let Baffert do what he does, I think you'll see potentially the best horse, the best race of this horse's career, because I've seen this movie before when it came to American Pharoah. That Breeders' Cup Classic was just, there was no doubt. If you had any doubt as to what kind of quality American Pharoah was, even through the Triple Crown, watch that Breeders' Cup, and that had to take your breath away. You got, what was his buyer figure, like 119 or something? I mean, he just killed those horses that day. And I think this horse has that kind of potential
when he's not being asked to do, you know, race after race after race after race, and you can train him into a race, like you get that option leading up to the Breeders' Cup.
Referencing that end of the year kind of performance, I doubt you had a chance to hear Andy Beyer from yesterday, and Andy, who acknowledged he was being curmudgeonly, he was kind of decrying not the achievement, but the level of performance as measured by FIG, and he absolutely fully expects that Justify would have that same arc and put himself at a level ultimately that would, you know, would put him among the kinds of classic performers that Andy was missing in his analysis, Jay, you know, saying that it just doesn't feel like the current era of Triple Crown participants and the winners of the individual races, whether they're dual classic winners, Triple Crown winners, or anything, that they just aren't in the same place at this time of year as horses of yesteryear that Andy was comparing.
Okay, sounds awfully get off my lawn to me, but okay. Old man sitting on his porch, Andy kid, you know. One thing, I think, I understand where he's coming from. I think the one thing that maybe is not being thought through here is that, you know, the Triple Crown, in terms of the way it's structured, with the Preakness coming 2 weeks after the Derby and the Belmont coming 3 weeks after the Preakness, hasn't changed, and nor should it. And look how much more we appreciate what American Pharoah and Justify have done, because they did it under the schedule that it's been done on over the years, as opposed to what we might be saying if there'd now be more space between those races, which is what a number of people had been lobbying for during that what turned out to be 37-year drought. I bring that up because, and this is where I come back to what you were just positing with Beyer, while the schedule of the Triple Crown hasn't changed, the way horses are campaigned generally has changed immensely over the last 40 years. So by my way of looking at it, winning the Triple Crown now is harder in the context of what is normally expected of a racehorse these days. So to come back on that kind of a schedule and keep it up, and keep it up, and keep it up. So it might be harder for horses to run the kinds of historically great figs that he's referencing from, you know, the 70s. There really weren't any figs per se in the in the 40s. But I mean, I know Andy can go back and extrapolate figs from. He was making figs in the 70s, even though they weren't published in a publication. He was doing his own figs. And yeah, maybe these figs aren't quite what those horses were doing. But I think when you look at it in the context of what racing and training is today compared to then, there's a reason maybe that happens. And if you give a horse a chance to be trained and ask him to do his best, like in the Breeders' Cup Classic with American Pharoah, as we were referencing a few minutes ago, then you see that historically great kind of performance, because that's the way horses are raced and trained these days. So that would be my answer to the, you know, sitting on your porch, get off my lawn crowd.
I wanted you to riff on it and have to circle back to the race and some of the postscript addressed by your colleague Dave Grenig regarding the trips and rides. Some thoughts on where that shakes out?
Well, I mean, obviously there were a number of people in the race, from John Velasquez to Todd Pletcher and Mike Rapoli, who thought that there was some strategy employed by Florent Giroux or decisions made by Javier Castellano that were questionable. And I thought Dave did a great job writing a news story, getting all voices into that discussion, ranging from, you know, what Mike Rapoli had to say to Pletcher saying that there really had been no plan B, and Giroux defending himself. I mean, that's what a good reporter does, and it was something that obviously needed to be done with what the post-race discussion was, and so we had a division of labor on Sunday as to who needed to do what. And I thought Dave did a great job with it. So now to your, you know, as to my feelings of what happened, I mean, obviously, here's where I, what I like and don't like about what happened. Obviously, Restoring Hope was ridden quickly away from the gate to establish a forward position. It looked to me like he got a little bit rank, and so Giroux took him away from Justify for two reasons. One, because he didn't want to engage with his stablemate and get into a duel with him, but also to try and get his horse to calm down. Because once he gigged him away from the gate, he didn't break super sharp, and once he gigged him, the horse, you could see, he got very aggressive the first eighth of a mile. In doing so, he certainly came out towards where Noble Indy was. But, you know, Noble Indy, he didn't break great, but he absolutely broke better than Restoring Hope. And if you watch the video of the race, Noble Indy was not ridden with purpose or urgency, I guess would be a better word, the first quarter mile of a race. And he absolutely had broken better than Restoring Hope. And by my way of looking at it, could have been in that spot had the rider so chosen. And so if Restoring Hope ends up gunning through there and getting up inside of him, well, that's shame on Javier for not being there if he wanted to be there. And supposedly that was the plan from Pletcher and Rapoli. As for what then happened with Bravazo as you went into and around the first turn with Restoring Hope dropping back down, you know, there was plenty of room right as when Restoring Hope was being taken away from Justify for Bravazo to get up in there if they wanted to go after Justify and put pressure on Justify. And Luis Saez chose not to do that. And so then Restoring Hope comes back down. He's obviously settled down from his earlier anxiousness. And now he's, you know, you're not going to race four wide the whole way if you don't have to. And he brings him back down to sit off of Justify. But he was a lot more manageable at that point. He wasn't perfect, but he was certainly better, you know, maybe a half mile into the race than he was an eighth of a mile into the race. So while certainly, you know, what Giroux did, you know, I think Giroux is a very clean rider. And I think a lot of this has to do with there have been instances in the past where people have been rightly questioning tactics when, for instance, we'll go back to the FedBiz Sky Kingdom situation against Shared Belief in the Awesome Again, preceding the Breeders' Cup Classic that year. You know, that was something that I know Jerry Hollendorfer was furious over how Sky Kingdom was, you know, just packed out Shared Belief the whole way while Fed Biz got a clean run and still Shared Belief ran him down. So I think a lot of people are viewing this situation with the knowledge that stuff like that has happened in the past. However, there's mitigating factors in this situation. To me, in the rides of Saez and Castellano, who by my way of looking at the race, had opportunities to be where, to be in a more forward position had they so ridden that way, and they, either by choice or by just being, you know, not aggressive, allowed Restoring Hope to dictate where they ended up being in the first part of the race. So that's my overview of what went down.
And I'm really not far off from that same view. You do allude, Jay, to a few of the, I don't want to call them storm clouds, but certainly some of the murky elements that, under the circumstances, give, you know, what transpired, allowing it to be open to more odious interpretation, and that is these cross purposes and these cross reference ownerships and overlap and internecine elements and riders being viewed as potentially not wanting to offend certain outfits. There's other systemic issues that seem to be very much intertwined with this whole discussion.
Give me a specific, Steve, because that was way too general.
Well, obviously the ownership issues and all, going back even to Audible's, the way people viewed Audible demurring from participation, whether it's the Windstar portion, and then the Rapoli overlap and being involved with Windstar and all of this, and then riders that that are not at cross purposes per se, but that are going to be easily have a question asked, why would you not? I mean, look at the way Rapoli has talked about Javier Castellano in this context.
I mean, that's, you covered a lot of ground there. So let's try and take all of those, one at a time. I mean, in the case of Audible, the horse was sent to Kentucky for a checkup. I know the whole timing of it looks bad. I would have loved to have seen him in the race. But if the horse wasn't doing well, and Pletcher told me without other people around last week that it was his decision that the horse was supposed to work. Elliot came to town to watch the horse work, and before he got there, he said, "I don't want to work him today. I want you to watch him gallop. I don't like the way he's been going this week." They watched him gallop. They postponed his work by a day, and they didn't like the way he galloped, and they put him on a plane to Kentucky to go and have a checkup there. So, the Elliot Walden being the mayor, the puppeteer in that specific case might not be quite what everybody, wants it to be. In terms of Castellano's ride, like I said, I don't know why he wasn't more aggressive early on, but he rides a lot for Pletcher. He rides a lot for Rapoli, and, I don't know why he'd want to jeopardize that relationship. To me, I just think he was indecisive. I think he thought that since he had broken Better Than Restoring Hope, he could let his horse ease up there and put pressure on him. The next thing you know, there's a horse being gunned inside of him. And that, because of the being passive there, he let another horse get into a spot where he could have been. That was how I viewed the way that first eighth quarter unfolded with Noblindy. And as for the overlapping ownership, I mean, yes, Windstar certainly had, overlapping ownership with Justify and Noblindy, but, Rapoli had overlapping ownership with Noblindy and Vino Rosso. So there could have been, shenanigans potentially for people to view of like, well, why was Noblindy going 22-4 the opening quarter? Was he trying to just, burn the other horse out for the purposes of Vino Rosso? That didn't happen, but I'm just using that as an example of what happens when you have these overlapping ownerships. And I think because there's these overlapping ownerships, people who are naturally, cynical and wanting to look for something untoward are going to see things that in some cases might be there, but in some cases might not be. And it's up to people to, try and take a sober, realistic view of each specific situation and see what went down. I know there's been a call for in some quarters for like, well, this is why we need to couple entries. Well, if you start coupling entries with some of the ownerships these days, you're going to have, a four-horse betting field in the Kentucky Derby, because between, Windstar's overlaps and China Horse Club's overlaps and Falkuman's overlaps, everybody's going to be associated with one another. So I don't think you want that. I think what you do want is in cases where you think there's something that went on, you want proactive stewards who investigate something immediately And, you know, I thought there was a quote in Dave Brenning's story from Lewandowski that said, well, nothing was called to our attention. Why does something need to be called to your attention? And if you think that either you thought something went wrong there and you're calling people in and asking them, like they would in Hong Kong, you know, okay, Florent, why did you ride your horse this way? Okay, Javier, why did you ride your horse this way? Okay, Luis, why did you ride your horse this way? And get some answers. Or you watch the race and you thought, all right, I'm fine with all that. There's nothing I need to ask. But the specific quote, nothing was called to our attention, to me was really, really disturbing. Like, it shouldn't need to be called to your attention. Either you saw something and you want to talk to the people involved, the trainers, the owners, and the jockeys of the horses involved with those, let's say, the three horses that are the most discussed amongst the early tactics of the race, Restoring Hope, Noble Indy, and Bravazo. You know, either call all them in and talk to them, or don't, and you feel that everything was fine. But it wasn't called to our attention? I mean, who's the police?
Yeah.
Who is the policeman here?
Yeah.
You are. That's what the stewards are. I thought that was a really disturbing and disappointing way to look at the situation from a regulator's standpoint, which is what a steward
is. Yeah, I agree. I mean, that it was either a poor choice of words or just abhorrent. There are things that ideally that come out of this that could, and the declaration of intentions may be something that rope that, you know, the organ, you know, the over bodies that can influence, you know, these discussions could take into consideration. And we'll talk to some jocks and see what their what their response is.
You know, that's a very murky way thing to go down. You know, everything has every reaction has a reaction, Steve. And you know, you could say that this horse is going to be a pace setter, but what happens if let's say hypothetically that Noble Envy was going to be a pace setter for Vino Rosso? Just spitballing here. He wasn't, but I just want to use that as an example. And he doesn't break well. And now he's not up there, and people are like, oh, look, this other horse just walked the dog the whole race. So they said before the race he was going to be a rabbit, and he wasn't. You know, to me, it's more incumbent upon the stewards. And, you know, I really think in this specific case, it would not be inappropriate for the stewards to call everybody in who was involved in those horses and just grill them as to what went on. And if you're satisfied with your answers, so be it. But to just passively say this wasn't brought to our attention is, to me, an abdication of your duty.
On the jockey front, we've had the conversation here about everything that went on, and we really haven't either celebrated or talked about what this means in Mike Smith's just unending career. You know, there was a period, Jay, you know, when he was looking for his elusive Derby win, and he got it, and you know, now has come this late in one's career. It's not even a renaissance; it's just an extended coda.
Right.
Some thoughts about Smith.
I mean, just you know, he obviously has the guy that Bob Baffert entrusts in these situations. I mean, don't forget he didn't ride Justify in his first race. Drayden Van Dyke did, but it was always intended that this was going to be Mike's mount. He was on him for the next five starts because he trusts him in these kinds of situations to not panic and to do the right thing. And the thing that the two things I like most about Mike are from an athletic standpoint, I just admire what he has been able to do to keep himself in shape and really in better shape than most of the guys he rides against. He's riding against guys who are literally half his age or even younger, and he's in better shape than them. He is completely dedicated to being an athlete, and that's why he retains the physical and mental abilities to ride at a high level. And the other thing I like about him, he's just a good guy. I mean, he's just a classy guy. He's a nice person. He always has time for people. He'll do anything for the sport in terms of promotion, in terms of charity work. And he's just a very humble person about all that. And you can't help but root for somebody who conducts themselves with the class that he does.
Very much. And it was kind of a special, much like the Espinoza moments with American Pharoah, with the crowd, you know, giving everybody as much of a chance to be a part of it and share in it. Jay, obviously we'll talk long term about the rest of the summer and toward Breeders' Cup, but what did it mean to you to see a second Triple Crown?
It was the achievement of what this horse has done that I don't think any of us will. You know, we may see another Triple Crown winner. I just can't imagine seeing another one that starts his career as late as February 18th. And that to me was what was remarkable about watching that performance and all the performances. But just to see it come to fruition on Saturday and for him to finish off his Triple Crown quest like that. So, it's just nice to be, I think, for anybody who's involved in the sport, to see horses compete at this level and to see terrific performances. And for me, Steve, just, the gratifying thing about seeing the Triple Crown of American Pharoah and now of Justify, this comes back to something I referenced earlier in our conversation this morning. To me, the great thing about this is that it shows it can be done. And it can be done on the timetable that we've had over the years of the Preakness 2 weeks after the Derby and the Belmont 3 weeks after the Preakness. You just need the horse. You don't need to do anything else. And when those horses come along, like American Pharoah or like Justify, you appreciate it more because you know, in the case leading up to American Pharoah, how many horses there were that came so close and couldn't do it. It ended up being, as we know, 37 years. So that, to me, is what my takeaway from what's gone on the last few years is that, look, it can be done. It might happen in clusters, four in the 40s, three in the 70s, and big gaps in between those. And, maybe we're in the stretch now where there's going to be a couple more over the next 4 or 5 years, and then no more for another 40 years. I mean, who knows how it'll transpire. But the bottom line is, it shows that it can be done. You just need a superior horse to pull it off. And fortunately for us, we've seen two of them do it in the last few years. And it's a great achievement because look at how many between Affirmed and American Pharoah couldn't do it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Jay, Triple Crown, we get Triple Crown coverage every year, there's three winners, two winners, or one winner of the three races when we go through this long odyssey with you, and I appreciate it, as always.
Well, Ben, thank you for all the time you give me, and it was great seeing you last week, and I look forward to seeing you down the road this year.
Without fail, and I suppose the one other element of this that should be folded in, Jay, I was appreciative of sharing the stalls, the starting gate with you at King Umberto's with the specials.
No higher honor than getting a dish named after you, right? That was pretty fun.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I could tell you appreciated my visual of the Privman Porterhouse.
I got the Privman Porterhouse last year, but this year in light of what had transpired that day, I had to order the dish that was called the Baffert Smith Triple Crown. It was like, the horse won the Triple Crown. You got to order the Triple Crown dish. So that was what I had Saturday night.
You might have wanted the Bic Bourgeois as a side dish.
I'll save that for next year.
I think it's going to become a menu item. It was a big hit. Jay, thanks a lot.
All right, Steve. Thank you.
Jay Pribman, everybody. DRF Pribman. And so dedicated to the craft and to the information, the accuracy. And I mean, Jay, amazing job. Let's take a time out here. We're going to visit with Louis Carvajal. Haven't spoken to Louis for a while, and he had some fishtailing with Imperial Hint. And, of course, just a gratifying to get the horse back and into a nice beat now. And we're going to work toward another Breeders' Cup sprint try. The performance on Saturday and or Friday in the True North, very eye-opening. Imperial Hint, with all his speed, didn't need to be on the lead. Louis Carvajal next. Steve Asmussen coming up as well to talk about the Met Mile win, B Jersey, the most emergent star from the weekend, a new star in the galaxy, and John White and Bob Baffert. Stay with us. Back after this, Louis Carvajal.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BrizNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BrizNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BrizNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year, and it's available at BrizNet.com/APR. The BrizNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BrizNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BrizNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
This is Steve Cole from the Cole Ranch, a horse farm and training center located in California. We offer folks the chance to join hands with us to own a young racehorse from our farm. We're dramatically different compared to most popular racing partnerships because we don't charge fees or commissions, and we don't inflate the value of the horse. Most racing partnerships buy a horse at auction for, say, $100,000, then turn around and sell shares for $200,000. We value our horses realistically and don't add on fees or commissions. Right now, Cole Ranch is selling shares in a 2-year-old calibred colt named Mr. Wickham. He's by Heatseeker out of Serena's Echo, our stakes producing mare, who is a full sister to multimillionaire Thor's Echo. You can get into this horse for as little as $1,000, which will entitle you to a 5% interest. If you want to invest in this horse, please call me at area code 805-990-3669 or visit us on the web at thecoleranch.com.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
I'm talking people about the same old game. They're running them numbers and the winners have a shame. The dice is loaded and the deck is stacked. The game itself will hold you back. Check out
the races about 10 minutes to the top of the hour. Looking forward to talking with Louis Carvajal and talking about Imperial Hint, who's now gotten back into a nice beat. And, of course, we go back to late in 2016 and a win at Parks, and that set Imperial Hint on a skein of six straight wins. The agonizing beat in the Breeders' Cup Sprint, only overhauled by Roy H., and now on his way to what could be another big try in the Breeders' Cup, third straight win, and or I shouldn't say third straight, excuse me, third graded stake win. And Louis Carvajal Jr. joins us at Imperial Hint's win Friday in the True North. Louis, congratulations.
Hey, thank you, Steve. Thank you for having me on your show. Everything is good here so far.
Well, you got to be happy with your five-year-old, and I thought the most notable element here was how easily comfortably he was rating for Javier Castellano.
Yeah, we did talk early in the morning, and Javier approached to me, and he came up with the plan. And you know, Javier is a professional, and he has a lot of experience. So we decided to take him off the pace a little bit. We know it was going to be a lot of speed in the race, and 6.5. I always thought of it. My horse didn't have a problem going 7/8, and but you know it's a little different on the horses, and I think the older horses, they got to grow a little more than my horse. My horse is still so small, but it worked out perfectly. It relaxed him. Javier had good hands, and it looks when he asked him, he was ready to roll, and we were just a little worried about some of the horses, like Whitmore coming off the pace. He always run really strong at the end.
You mentioned the 7/8, and of course, you were coming off the Churchill Downs try Derby weekend. You had to deal with the heavy slop that day. I mean, he is one on wet tracks, but even with the win in the General George going back to early last year, which is 7/8, it just feels that he's been that much better going three quarters. And this signaled, though, that, you know, with added maturity, you know, that maybe, you know, he is that versatile. And we've seen plenty of sprinters. You know, you think about what Navarro does with Sharp Azteca, and you know, the ability to stretch to a mile, and to, you know, the versatility going, you know, the various one turn distances. And I thought this may be a signal that you've turned a corner with Imperial Hint.
Yeah, Steve, it's one thing. You know, when I went to Kentucky, and the horse, he did train fantastic over the track in Kentucky. I took him early and to work him over the track there, and he had an awesome workout, and I had no doubt that Imperial Hint will do very well going 7/8 over there. But to tell you the truth, when you started raining, and 2 hours before the race, it started pouring down rain, I got a little worried about it. You know, I was not very happy the way that the track looked for my horse. You know, every track is different. You get some wet, fast tracks and sloppy tracks, and every track is so different just because the surface. And you know, when he won in Laurel, he handled it very well. But it's, like I say, you know, though, every track is different when it gets sloppy, wet. And unfortunately for Imperial Hint, it's like Javier told me too, that he didn't handle it very well, that kind of surface. It stood on the inside, you know, it couldn't come out more to the turn four pad. But, you know, this, like I said, you know, I I think he can go 7-8, but right now, the way he runs, I think for now, I don't know if you think I'm right or wrong, I think we should stay with the three quarters. But I think right now, I'm not going to try to go any farther than 6.5 or anything like that, just to keep my horse comfortable. I think I'll stay for now and see how it goes in three quarters only right now.
What does that mean, do you think, toward working a path back to Breeders' Cup? Saratoga, we've got the 7-8. We got both, right? We got a 6.5 and 7 with the Forgo and the Vanderbilt. What are you looking at? How many times do you project that he would run in the summer and early fall?
Right now, he came back off this race of the True North in really good condition and he's back in training and looks really good. But he was a good and tough race. He put a lot of heart in it. And last time he ran here in Belmont, and I think now I have my plans. If everything goes good, and we talk over with Mr. Mamon, I think we have 7 weeks. If you're not mistaken, 7 weeks to the race in Saratoga, the Grade One for Vanderbilt. I think that's three quarters. If I'm not mistaken, I think it's three quarters, and that would be that next race for him. And then we probably will look for something else. It could be a Laurel or something else for Imperial Hemingway going three quarters also. But I think that's the right now. It gives me enough time with 7 weeks for the Saratoga race. That's what I think the most likely pointing.
Very nice. Well, to get him up to the spa, and the Vanderbilt is six. So right in his projected wheelhouse. Well, Louis, it's obviously a great showcase for you too to be able to come to the biggest race days in the country with this horse. And how is Imperial Hint, we talked last year the last time, how has he changed things for you?
For me, for myself, my family here and my family back home in Chile, and plus a lot of my friends, I get a lot of publicity from the media from Chile, because we got a lot of some of the owners and new horses here running the United States from Chile. It seems like everything is this Imperial Hen, it has put me on the map a little more. I had new owners. This is amazing. I can't put no words on myself. For every trainer who we got less opportunities and we stay in the game because we have a dream. And luckily, I'm 45 years old, and this dream of mine, it came quickly, I think, because some of the person, they take a lot of longer to have a nice horse like I have right now. And also, like my owner, Mr. Raymond Mamon, I know him for about 20 years. I've been training for her a little more than 10 now. And that's the only good thing. Sometimes you get a really good horse and you win a couple of good races, and then probably the horse will get sold, or the owner will change hands to another trainer who has a lot more experience in big races, or go to a mega stable, and then that will be the end for people like I am, who has small barns. But it's always a one opportunity. I work for Mr. Bob Durso, Mammon Park, for 10 years, and And he had a really nice horse. His name was Frisk Me Now, and luckily it was owned by his wife and him. But it seems so limited sometimes, opportunity for guys like us. So this is what Imperium has taken me, Steve. It's no word to put in how amazing and good it feels to be, you know, in this kind of races and meet new people, give up new opportunities.
Well, I saw over the weekend as well, speaking of opportunities, you got a Jersey bred. You won up at Monmouth over the weekend, Prendimi. And so between the Philly summer and being able to ship into New York and wherever you need to with Imperial Hint and, you know, whoever the next nice stake horse that comes and that you turn into, always pleased to be able to celebrate this with you, Louie, and continued success. And we're looking forward to seeing you in Saratoga.
Oh, yes. Yep. I love Saratoga. It's, the people, what they say, you know, that's a summer place to be. It's a beautiful racetrack. and believe me, I had a friend of mine. I used to work for Angel Pena, and we used to go every summer to Saratoga. Mm. And me and I had a friend, Orlando, and we couldn't wait as a kid to go to Saratoga and just to go back there. Hopefully we'll go back there and run a good race, a great stake race with a horse. He does have a chance, and it gets better and better. And I can't, you know, thank more than Imperial Hint that's been taking me there.
Were you with Bob Durso when Frisk Me Now ran in the was that the Whitney, I think, that he might have come up and run?
Yes, we were there with Bob, and unfortunately we had a little issue almost similar with Justified Guard after the Kentucky Derby. He had a little bit of irritation and his legs, and then everything worked out perfectly. But I think we finished, if I'm not mistaken, we finished fourth in that race. We went against Awesome Again, it was a great, a really great horse. But it was great just to be there. You can imagine, like I said, it's the feeling, it's amazing. If everything goes well with my horse, training-wise, I would look forward to go there and just go with a horse so he has a good chance, you know?
Well, that he's going to as one of the top sprinters, one of the top older sprinters in the country. And Louis Carvajal, appreciate the opportunity to talk, and we'll see you up here at the beginning of the meet.
Yes, thank you. I'll be looking forward to see you there too, Steve. Thank you for giving me a little time. I just show it. I love listening to it, and I'm glad that I'm back on it, and I hope I can come back to you and talk to you again some other time and with good news.
Without fail. And a grade one conversation would be fun. That's what we'll look forward to that.
Yes, me too. Definitely that will be ultimate. It will be nice. Hopefully we get to talk about a nice grade one race.
Without fail. Louis Carvajal, everybody. And, you know, when we talked to Louis last year and he told his whole story and, you know, that he really, you know, from really modest start with his barn. And it's great to hear that he has picked up owners out of Imperial Hint. That's heartening. And you can really tell. I mean, his feelings are very similar to so many, you know, smaller outfits. And they only need to have a horse to work with. And that's all anybody wants is a chance with a good horse. And they can show what they can do in terms of horsemanship. Let's take a break. Top of the hour. A couple of prominent horsemen yet to come. Steve Aspison. We'll talk about him winning his first Metropolitan Handicap. B Jersey. Mr. Fipke. And boy, Charlie Fipke very steadily keeps racking up these signature wins, both with his, we think more maybe with the, you know, the mares, but this is a big win for Charlie Fipke. Steve Asmussen joins us. We got a couple other things, obviously, with Steve. He had a full weekend, and haven't looked at the probables for him, but I imagine, he's got to have a few for the Matt Wynn. And who would I'm trying to think of who he might. I've got to look it up. I'll look it up while we're on the break. Who he's got maybe for the. He's got to have somebody for the Foster, right? Yeah. We'll check. Back after this, Steve Asmussen.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Hi, John Parada here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
The thoroughbred breeding industry will never be the same with the launch of Daily Racing Form's Buyer-Sire Performance Standings, presented by Darley. These groundbreaking ratings use buyer speed figures to measure a stallion's performance beyond wins and earnings, focusing on providing a measurement of a sire's true ability to produce high-quality horses. View the Buyer-Sire Performance Standings at drf.com/buyer-sire and get the true information that breeds results. That's drf.com/buyer-sire.